All right. You finally made it here.
I finally made it here.
This is like a few months. We've been kind of going back and forth, trying to figure out a time.
Letting babies just like hold space for me to be here. Just
tell them to hold off a little bit. Yeah. You got to come on Wake the Fake Up.
Got to come on Wake the Fake Up.
Lindsay Mijas.
Mijas.
You know why I can't say that?
Why?
Because it's not, it's like a word magic for me. Because it's me more.
There you go. I like that.
Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Welcome to Wake the Fake Up.
Thank you.
Hallelujah.
Yes.
Thank you for existing. Thank you for being here. Thank you for offering what we're about to get into to so many people that need to hear this message.
Yeah. I'm really excited to be here. Thank you so much for holding space to have this vessel for voices and conversations to be heard.
I remember the first time I laid eyes on you was in Newport Beach at, you know, somebody's
it was a Zach Bush event.
Yeah. And we made eye contact in the kitchen, and it was love at first sight. Just souls like just uniting.
I
appreciate what you're doing. I've been following you intensively over the last few months especially, and just seeing what, you know, what you're offering out there through your experience and through your, you know, unconditional love.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell everyone listening like who you are and what you're doing in this life?
Yeah. So I am in all sense a traditional midwife. So what that means is I am kind of dictated by the state, but I get to find my own balance within that statement. So I bring a level of autonomy to all of my clients where I look them in the eyes when they first come in and I tell them right away that I inherently trust that they know their body above and beyond anybody else. And I'm going to be here to be their Sherpa, to walk this path and do this journey with them. But I always go back to that remembering that they know everything about themselves more than I do.
Absolutely. So you're like the cosmic mirror.
Yes. Right? Yes, exactly.
We've forgotten what we've forgotten. It's time to remember.
Yeah. Because it's all there. Like, it's all there. There's not much we have to do. We just have to be quiet enough to listen.
Is it unlearning the things that
there's
we thought?
There's definitely an unlearning that has to happen.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, one thing I want to do, let's start with just a collective breath, because I feel like these conversations, birth in general, is really triggering. And so when we get on the same wavelength, that it's nice to just drop back into that level of remembering. It also happens to be Ram Dass's birthday today. So that's I just want to start with just saying, be here now. If you're driving, don't close your eyes, but let's all collectively take a breath. So as we breathe in through our nose, down into our lungs, down into our bellies, our womb space, and as you exhale, just feeling everything start to melt, all of the muscles around your face, your jaw, your shoulders. And I just want you to focus right now on that heart chakra. And that level of vibration that comes from your heart chakra is connecting you right now to every single person that is listening to this with you. And as we move through this conversation, I want you to come back anytime that you feel maybe triggered, maybe out of body, to this breath.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We're entering ceremony.
We are.
And what we're about to get into is really the epicenter of our existence and one of the most powerful, you know, relevant expressions that has gone haywire and completely misunderstood.
Yeah.
And we're talking about the modern birthing systems, which are far from modern, actually more draconian.
Yeah. It's the basis of the beginning of life, right? Yeah. It's all that we know entering into this life. It's our first cosmic imprint into this world.
Right.
And if it's something that's not of high vibration, then what does that give us throughout the rest of our lives? What is the collective experience around that?
It's really a... an awareness that needs to be had. And if so many people listening to this, they look at their astrology, mm-hmm. they look at their horoscope, they're tuned in to their rising signs and their moon signs mm-hmm. and all of that. Yet, have they really thought about what that actually means? Because those are relevant to the time of birth and the location and all those things. Mm-hmm. And the star chart that's above you, there are cosmology.
Yeah.
And if they truly believe that those are relevant accuracies and relevant technologies to understand their inner wisdom and how they go about life and their karma and their destiny, then they should have the awareness that how important that process is, mm-hmm. of finally coming out of the womb and taking that first breath.
The first breath.
That atmospheric kiss, if you will.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so how did you get into this field? Let's start there. And then where we're at today.
Yeah.
And what we're going to do about it.
Yeah. So I actually got into this field with my daughter's birth 20 years ago. And she was actually born down the street from here. I had every medical intervention possible. Not because I thought that that was what I wanted. It's just the system that I entered into. Sure. I was young. I really just kind of like trusted my doctor. That was what we're supposed to do. You're supposed to listen to the professionals. I left that experience. I had a C-section. I felt the C-section. The anesthetic didn't work properly. So I actually had an out-of-body experience within a surgical experience.
Wow.
I saw my deceased grandfather. It was an out-of-body experience that I can't even put into words because I thought I was dying.
Was it a planned C-section?
It wasn't a planned C-section. Okay, I had tried to force my daughter to come into this world for 18 hours, and the doctor said, your body's not working, your baby's too big, your body's broken, let's do a C-section.
Wow, and you're feeling the pain?
Feeling the pain, out of body. Finally,
scared,
very scared, because I didn't want to leave my daughter.
Of course,
you know, that was my job to protect her. Sure. So, once the surgery was done, she was placed in my arms, and an immense amount of love came over my entire body, where I was able to bond with her in a way that most people don't in those experiences. It usually takes a little bit of time to feel better from the anesthetic, to learn breastfeeding, and it was just so natural to me. Mm. So, over the year that followed after her birth, I was able to really come back to the remembrance within my soul that something was missing. A rite of passage was stolen from me. And I was just anything I could get my hands on at that point. I was trying to figure out how to help women not have the same experience that I just had.
You had no inkling of this or idea or concepts of this before that experience. That was the trigger?
That was the trigger. So I've always been in medicine. So when I was 17, I was working on the back of an ambulance. I worked in the emergency room. I was like called the baby whisperer growing up. You know, all the babies in the neighborhood, with parents would bring the baby to me and I would be able to calm a fussy baby. I wanted to be a pediatrician. Did I even know what that meant? No, I just wanted to be around babies. Sure. So it was there in some capacity, but not to the point of where I'm at today.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so where did that lead you? Did that lead you into anger and frustration? Did you have to go through a process of letting go?
Well, there's a process of grief that comes along, and every process of grief, it's like an onion. So you peel back each layer, and there was anger, there was grief, there was sadness, there was empowerment, there was, how can I be a change agent so this doesn't happen again? And So as I journeyed through that, I just immediately jumped headfirst into the birth world. Again, not really knowing what that even meant. So I became a childbirth educator. I thought if I could sit in a hospital setting and teach people all of the research-based information, that they would then be armed to go to their doctor and request something that they didn't want. What that did is it actually pissed off all the doctors in the hospital. I was always getting, you know, letters about how I wasn't teaching appropriate things.
Sure.
So then I jumped to lactation. I was like, I'm going to help breastfeeding. I'm going to help all these sweet little babies with breastfeeding. But I would walk into the breastfeeding clinic and I would look at the board and I would see C-section, C-section, C-section. And I knew all of those moms would be in my clinic with breastfeeding problems.
Yeah.
So that wasn't really helping either. I felt like I was an accomplice to a crime, basically.
Yeah, yeah. You had to come from the bottom part and try to make your way back to homeostasis.
Yes. And that
climbing.
There was none of that was going to happen in the hospital setting.
How do I get before it?
So right around that time, one of my dear colleagues called me and said, hey, I'm starting a midwifery school.
Yeah.
It's going to be the first state-accredited midwifery school. Come and join. And there was no question.
No doubt.
Jumped straight into it. During that time, so it's a 4-year process, 3-year process, depending on how long it takes you, I was pregnant with my son. And so I had the complete opposite flip side to the story. So my son was born at home in my jacuzzi under the stars. It was a hot summer night. And I had, you know, this out-of-body experience where I was literally in the stars receiving my baby into this planet, this earthly field. And that was – that was it. Like I experienced it on a level that was my rite of passage.
Right. Yeah. That is the best news of all time.
Yeah.
And did you notice a complete physiological, emotional, spiritual difference between that experience post-birth through the, you know, the postpartum experience and all of that versus the first one?
Absolutely. Yeah. So when you have something done to you and instead of you doing it yourself, it'd be like someone pushing you in a wheelchair in a marathon. Yeah. Would you get the same amount of fulfillment saying that you did a marathon? No, of course not. So I was able to fully embody myself in knowing that anything that was hard in my life, I could do.
Right.
And that's the common thing that I hear over and over and over again, where these women are, you know, at that very end stage of giving birth. And we call it transition or transformation. And it's the hardest part. And everybody looks at me at some point and says, I can't do this anymore. And to me, I'm like, yes, we're going to have a baby soon.
Yeah.
And I look at them and I say, the only way out is through. And I lock hands with them and we keep that eye contact. And she pushes through. And she has a baby.
Incredible. So you're really the anchor, helping so many women get through that final stage and helping them pull into their own discernment and their own loins, if you will, to go through that process.
Because I can't give birth for them.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's beautiful work. You know, it's almost I remember researching this years ago, that there's an actual epigenetic evolution that occurs when a woman is fully present during a childbirth, right? Which makes sense, just on a DNA level and understanding how we need to expand our protector self and our caring self and all these things that occur. Even as a man, you know, they say that the man can evolve in that process as well.
Of course.
Certain things turn on.
Anybody that's in the room is basically in the hormonal cocktail that's there.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, even me, like all the births that I get to experience, like each time I step into that space, something inside of me changes.
It's total rush, huh?
Total rush, but there's a different level of reverence for life. Every single time. It doesn't change. There's not births that are like more boring. It's literally a miracle every single time I step into that space.
How did we lose this? How did it become so taboo? What's the cog in the machine that has shut this down? Because this is the holiest of holy.
Yeah.
You know, we just had the orgasmic birther
on
here. And so I'm kind of in that soup of just pure presence of the highest level.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not a woman, but I can less than a decimal of one percentage point even try to feel into what that experience is through my entheogenic practices and my sacred medicine and being there for my father during his transition into death and all that. I've had these moments. And so it's like, how could we have gotten to a point where we're escaping this rite of passage and suppressing it and numbing it? What was the thinking there?
So it kind of goes hand in hand with where we're at culturally speaking, right? I always like to look back at the history. Anytime that something doesn't resonate within my soul, it's not intuitive to me. I'm like, why? I got to do more research on this. So prior to 1900, 100% of babies were born at home. In 1938, we were right about 50% of babies that were born in the hospital. So
38 years, half.
Half, okay?
Okay.
But we still have to take a couple steps back before that, okay? This is part of a history, which I call a herstory, that's forgotten, okay?
Yeah.
So in 1484, there was a book that was written by the Catholic Church. This was called the Malicis Maleficarium, which translates into the witch's hammer. Okay, so when everybody says the witch trials, everybody thinks of the Salem witch trials. There was a movie about it. That's really all we really know about the witch trials.
That's just a decimal of it, if that.
Yeah. So what we know is that the Catholic Church basically went into every town and village, and they said that midwives were the greatest threat to the Catholic Church.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you have a family care provider, midwives have always been womb to tomb. Okay. They were the original family physician. Mm. They were the herbalist. They were the therapist. They were the keeper of secrets. Everything that encompassed medicine at that point was done by a midwife, a town midwife.
Yeah.
So if all of a sudden our trusted midwives are now the greatest threat to the Catholic Church, okay, and we're going through the witch trials. So let's kind of like take a perspective and think about the population of the earth at that time. It's estimated that it was about 350 million people.
Right.
Okay. We know that over 9 million women were murdered during the witch trials.
Which was a span of how long?
To be debated, but probably about 300 years. And I think it goes before that, but yeah. There's just not a lot of written history about it.
It was a complete assault and attack.
It was an erasure.
On the central nervous system of the family and of the town.
Yeah. So right? It wasn't just midwives. It was children. It was mothers. It was grandmothers. And it would be like, you have a birthmark. We're going to try to drown you. And if you survive, then you're a witch and we're going to burn you. But if they drowned because they weren't a witch, then the whole city was wiped out from women. There were some cities and towns that literally only had 1 to 2 women.
This is a Luciferic impulse, yes. By the way, which is a hyper egocentric using spirit, God manifestation into creating atrocities into this realm,
yeah.
Which was off kilter of the balance, which is the Christ in the middle. So keep going. This yes. is, yeah.
So as we moved into like the 17, 1800s, like basically any baby that was born wasn't even considered holy. This is like where, you know, baptism came from until they were blessed by a priest. If they were touched by a midwife, they were considered tainted, dirty,
condemned.
From the devil, condemned.
Yeah.
And what happened is all of these oral traditions, because this was all through storytelling, this was all through watching our aunties, this is all through just sitting around the fire and
talking. Word of mouth. Yeah.
They were forgotten. They were still there because we had the knowing and the remembering. Mm. But that knowing and remembering was so traumatic within our souls that everything just kind of got pushed wayside. So as we started to immigrate across into the Americas, what we started seeing is that right around 1700s, 1800s, we were starting to see the rise of Western medicine. Western medicine was started with priests. That was male priests. That's what it was. And then it worked its way into America. Rockefeller took over at
that's
that
right.
point.
Yeah.
Right. So they owned the media.
Yeah.
And then they also realized that medicines were made by petroleum. So yeah. If they dominated that field, then they dominated everything. So when they owned the media companies, they would make smear campaigns against granny midwives in the South. So granny midwives in the South were typically of African descent, slaves that were brought over.
Creole.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they weren't persecuted like they were in Europe.
And they resisted too.
They did.
They had a little bit more like
oomph to them.
That's right.
Yeah. So now we're smear campaigning them. Like they're completely just kind of cut out. Like
just like anything else that they do.
Yeah.
They find a devil within it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So birth got brought to the hospital.
What year are we talking about? This is
now we're in the 1900s. Okay. Like, right. Like 1900, every baby was born at home.
Modern medicine starts to make its expansion out.
Yep.
Science becomes the newfound religion.
Right.
Scientism.
Yep.
Right.
Females were not allowed in medical school.
Yeah. Wow.
They were not allowed. I think it was 1970 that we were still averaging about 80% of male dominance within the medical field.
So the woman's inherent intuition was completely suppressed.
Completely.
And they had to listen to some state-sponsored or federal-sponsored man give them the rules of how they would be having their own children.
Yeah. So here's what happened when birth got brought into the hospital. So now it's male-dominated. And now we have to control the birthing process. So as we're controlling the birthing process, every woman gets scopolamine. This is an anesthetic that's an amnesia effect.
Yeah.
So you have no recollection of what you're doing, but you're still feeling it. So you're still kind of like acting like a wild animal.
Yep.
And now you're tied down to a bed because they want to control you. They don't need a bunch of wild animals in their hospital wards.
Archaic to the highest level.
Yes.
Yeah.
Babies are drug out by forceps. Their cords are cut and immediately severed.
Right there on the spot.
While
blood and oxygen and nutrition and everything vital and their hormones, everything is still there.
Yep. That's the invention of the cord clamp, right?
Yeah.
Like it wasn't because we needed a cord clamp. It was because if they cut the cord without a cord clamp, the doctor would be covered in blood because it was coming from a pulsating organ that was supposed to be continuing to feed the baby.
That's just I've never heard this. If you're listening right now, I've never heard that in particular.
Yeah.
And that just put a lot of things in perspective for me. Please keep going.
So I just want you to also think about farm animals, right? Like when have you ever seen a farm animal had their cord cut?
Yeah.
Never, right? I had a client that gave birth last year and she told me my grandmother was from Romania and she had 10 kids and she was out in the field and she gave birth to one of her kids and she, you know, once the baby was born and the placenta was born, she cut the cord with two rocks and walked back to the farmhouse, you know? So we have all of these different things going on. Women are being controlled. Men are not a part of this process, meaning their partners were not a part of this process. Because if they were, they would probably be fighting the doctors if they saw their wives in that state.
Right.
So
that almost seems like it was a strategy.
It had to have been.
You know?
It had to have been.
They knew strategically that we're going to have to separate this.
Yeah.
So they don't experience it viscerally because they're going to have a reaction if there's any love in the room.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So there was really no standard of hygienics at this point. So doctors would be performing autopsies outside of the room, not wearing gloves, not washing their hands, coming in, doing a vaginal exam, boom, right away, sepsis. So
yeah.
Maternal mortality rates shot up, infant mortality rates shot up. And we were just in this space of everything being completely numbed, complete separation of mom and baby at that point. That's where nurseries came from. You know, think about like 1950s movies. There was dads in the hallway smoking their cigars, looking into the nursery window at their babies.
Yeah.
And that's completely, that's disassociation right there. Like totally. That's not how the unit's supposed to be. The mother and the baby are one unit. We shouldn't even consider them separate because they're one unit.
Yeah.
So we came into this space of everything being lost, everything being numbed, everything being separated, and the complete assertion of dominance that medicine was best. And I'll briefly talk about what my thoughts on male circumcision are, because that's another beast that gets brought into it.
Sure.
Dr. Kellogg Cereal, said that if we circumcised our boys, that they wouldn't masturbate because they thought that masturbation led to insanity.
Yeah.
So I want you to really think about a mother holding and protecting the most important person in their life, this brand new baby, and a doctor coming in and saying, "We'll be right back. Let me take your baby," taking that baby, strapping it down to a plastic board, and then taking a scalpel to the most sensitive part of the human body, and then bringing the baby back to the mother like everything's okay.
And the mother having to recognize that she did not protect her child.
She did not protect her child.
What kind of psychological damage that creates and the inward battle that goes through and through.
And the primal imprint on that baby.
Primal imprint on the baby.
Yeah.
So let's pause right there because I deep dived into this subject a few years ago. And I also came to an awareness and understanding that there was also a tremendous amount of resentment or loss of love and trust from a woman to the man when the man was not present during birth.
Mm-hmm. Because of that hormonal cocktail that I talked about.
Correct. Yeah.
You're supposed to be embodied in
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
also, you're supposed to be protecting it.
That's right.
If we were in a cave, that man would be part of the experience, but he would also make sure that there wasn't any predators outside of the cave to get in and harm the experience.
That's right.
So if they're missing from that component of protection, automatically there's going to be resentment.
We're dynamic beings,
mm-hmm.
and we did come with a set of instructions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to sleep, we have to eat,
mm-hmm.
we have to absorb and eliminate, we have to get in front of the sun, we have to ground to the earth, and there's key aspects to pivotal moments of creationism in this life that are fundamental to the alchemy of love, happiness, and thriving.
Yeah.
And this is the root of it.
Yeah.
And so 1940s and 50s go on, 60s. Yeah. Do we start getting worse because of pharmacology and because of, you know, injection schedules and drugs and Pitocin and blue lights and coddling and crazy, crazy. Now we got Wi-Fi and electromagnetic frequencies, you know, We're doing sonograms. I can go on and on. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to this, right? Let's get into it.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot. There's so much to it. There's so many different aspects to it. And I think what we need to realize is that what we have done has not made anything better. In fact, it's made it worse. It is safer for your baby to be born in Cuba. They will have a higher survival rate than being born in the United States.
Interesting, like per capita.
Yeah, we are one of the worst for infant and maternal mortality rates.
What are the stats today? Like, what's going on?
So we know last year, so between 2020 and 2021.
You're talking about straight morbidity.
Morbidity, death.
I'm not even talking about autism spectrum.
No, I'm talking about death.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Between 2020 and 2021, this just came out like 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
Our maternal mortality rate shot up 40% in the United 40? States. 40.
Four would have been a lot.
I mean, 40? It's astronomical. There's no excuse for it. We should be sounding the alarms. We should be, like, you know, posting SOS signs. Like, that is unexcusable. 40? Yeah, 40%.
So statistical analysis of morbidity for child.
For mother. Maternal.
So maternal morbidity giving birth from 2019 to 2020 was a spike in
from 2020 to 2021.
So 2020 to 2021, 40%.
40%. Now, all of the scientists are saying it's because of COVID and all of these different things that happened in COVID. So they're sugarcoating that people got treated like total shit and ignored and birthed alone and birthed with a mask. And I could go on and on, but like there has to be something else that's happened during that time.
What's happening?
I mean, we could all speculate, like there was a very experimental drug that was placed into our culture around that time.
Yep.
And so there's just so many different things. Do I think that it is because of the lack of care that was given and neglect to? 100%.
What are they dying of? Are they hemorrhaging during birth? Or are they having heart attacks?
Sepsis, heart disease was another one that got thrown in there. Clots are huge.
Yep.
We know that the rates are beyond astronomical in African American women. I think it's 19 times higher that an African American woman would die in childbirth compared to a white woman.
Is this a socioeconomic thing?
I mean, it's all to be speculated, right?
This is a devastating statistic. I've never even heard of that. Yeah. And I'm surprised I haven't heard of that.
Yeah, I mean, it literally just came out.
It just came out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then another thing that we're starting to see is a drastic rise in stillborns.
Wow.
You know, that's when the baby passes prior to being born. And so that's another thing that we have to look at and say, like, what the heck is going on? Is it because 5G got flipped on? Like what is it? Like, there's just so many different variables that we've introduced over the last few years that we can speculate all we want, but
who out there's talking about this?
I mean, everything that's on the news, it was published in the news. It was on every major news channel that hit it, but it wasn't ever because of something that was done. It was just, 40%, our maternal mortality rate shot up. Like, that's not okay.
Yeah.
So we're going backwards is what's happening. We're at a place where now I've been in the field for almost 20 years. So I was at this place where I was like, things are getting better. We're bridging a gap between professionals and hospitals and midwives. I was invited into UCI School of Medicine every year to go and talk about the midwifery model of care. All of that is halted. That's not even happening anymore. And so because of COVID. So we've lost the humanism with how we treat people in this process. And so what do we do to get it back at this point? In my personal opinion, it's like the system needs to burn to the ground because there's no repair at this point. It's so bad that there's no repair.
Yeah.
And so what does that mean? That means that people are seeking something that's different. They're seeking out of hospital experience. They're seeking home births. And, you know, just 2019 to 2020, just COVID, right? We know that home birth went up drastically. We went up 22% in 1 year with those statistics. I mean, that's huge. That's like every year before that, we were like maybe 2%, maybe, you know, 1%.
Yeah.
You look at the different states and it's like Idaho and Texas and all these states that are like, get me the hell out of the hospital.
Yeah.
So Where we blend and marry this, I don't know. I know that as I stand with my feet on the soil here in Orange County, California, that I'm making a change one mother and one baby at a time. But I need to do more than that.
Yeah.
And that's where we lock arms. And that's where we say, like, wake the fake up, people.
Absolutely. You know? Well said. I'm right there with you. And I'm hand in hand. I'm still rattling on that statistic. Sorry. It's that hits me. You know, I think about my own mother and I was born through cesarean and I was circumcised and
I mean standard American
standard operating procedure and my mom didn't know. She was fresh off the boat from Iran and was in a new world, and it just breaks my heart. And I know that must have been so traumatic for her, that entire experience.
Yeah. And, because had she stayed in Iran, she probably would have had a normal vaginal birth with a midwife.
Absolutely.
You probably wouldn't have been circumcised.
They had mystic women that were that held that container. Yeah.
But it's Western culture. So we there's this, like,
it's a business.
It's a business. Yeah, you know, business. Brazil idolizes Western medicine. They have an 85% C-section rate.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's crazy. Yeah. My C-section rate any given year is like 4, maybe 5%.
Yeah. It's just a level of consciousness.
Yeah.
Right. That's passed through to what is acceptable and what's normal and
exactly
all the things. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So what the hell do we do about this? And I obviously the conversations like this, this is, you know, paving the way for people to learn more and experience more and to have more awareness, especially if they're planning on having a family and things of that nature.
Yeah.
And so are you leading a coalition of midwives that meet under a tree on a full moon once a month? Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
But I mean, I wish. Yeah, that sounds great. Right? Yeah. I think that my biggest focus lately has been trying to speak to the masses, like just getting my voice out there, getting these statistics out there, getting the story, having people remember the herstory of this. Because once we start to come back to that, like, resonance, that level, why I started the conversation with that breath is because, holy shit, how overwhelming is that? Like, how overwhelming is a statistic like that? And so that's when we, like, probably need to take another collective breath here and, like, realize that when we get to come back into a space of reclaiming that rite of passage and remembering that they don't get to be divisive with something that's one of the most normal physiological processes on the planet.
Yeah.
Then we get to step back into our power.
That's right.
Right before we started recording, I was having a conversation with you about how fentanyl is being brought into the system right now. And just recently, a couple months ago, I heard of a story of a hospital literally like 10 miles up the street from here where the mom was just getting a standard epidural, right? An epidural is a catheter, a needle catheter that's inserted into the dural space of the spine, and it numbs you basically from the breasts down. Standard. Like 80% of women get this in
labor. SOP.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what happened is that this mom wasn't told that there was fentanyl in the medication cocktail that they were giving her, and she actually overdosed. And she was brought back by Narcan in the middle of labor, had to have a C-section, ended up in the ICU, baby ended up in the NICU for a standard medical procedure.
Yeah.
I mean, people aren't aware of these things.
It's, I don't know how we got here. We're all running around in some form of daze or some form of amnesia.
Yeah.
I think the system is doing a great job keeping us in fight, flight, hide mode where we're in this sympathetic state, constantly looking to get out of our presence.
Yeah.
And when you're in that state, you can't even think about these kinds of things. No. All the other things that you're trying to chase are all illusions, and the real presence is nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
And you get, all of a sudden you wake up one day and you're experiencing that incident, you know? And it's interesting. We're talking about bringing life into this realm. I think all this conversation begins way before pregnancy.
Of course.
It's between the cosmic union, you know, of two people that are committed to bringing life together and being on the same page together.
Yes.
That's really important. So if you're listening to this and this is striking a nerve for you and you know that this is your path and you're going the holistic route, not the allopathic, make sure that these are this is the influence that's in your life and in the partners that you choose.
Yeah.
because it can't be one side of the coin.
No, you have to be very conscious about it.
That's right. Yeah. And there's so many women that reach out to me on a daily basis, like, that are struggling in their partnerships and they don't know what to do. They feel trapped. Either they're pregnant or they just had a kid. And I'm always confused, like, how did you make this decision to get here in the first place?
Yeah.
We have to be operating with discernment in all things, especially who we're going to be bringing life with in this world.
Yeah.
Right?
A conscious conception.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it is. You have to till the soil of what you're going to create, which is a new life. And that sacred contract that you establish with a partner to make that decision to bring a life into this world is one of the most important things that we can do. And most of the time, we're just so unconscious about it.
That's right.
Yeah.
What do we do about that?
Well,
we create a new dating site, a conscious dating site.
That would be amazing. Right? But I feel like there are those things popping up, like Aubrey Marcus. Like, he has the, I forget what it's called, but, you know, like, there are these little pods of energy around that are like making space and these kind of sacred vessels for people to come and commune together. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure in that hope that, like, people are actually going to find partnership within that and move into a space of sacred union and conscious conception and conscious parenting and birth and all of that.
Right.
But we need more of it. And we need to actually tune in people to those different things, because most people don't even know that that's an opportunity out there.
And they don't know it exists.
Yeah.
So it's more knowledge, more light, more education, more awareness. The more information you have, the better position you are to make a rational decision that makes sense.
Yeah.
Right. And if we're neglecting the knowledge and we're pushing it away, it's going to come back and bite us very, very strongly in the wrong places.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So moving forward, what are you seeing in the midwifery space?
Yeah.
Are there substantial accredited institutions that are putting their feet in their pounding their feet in the mud and saying, we're building this?
No.
That's not a thing.
No.
The system not allowing it?
The system's not allowing it. And if there's one thing that happened with 2020 is that there was more divisiveness within the community of midwives than ever.
So it's like Waldorf schools, kind of?
Exactly.
They got the Trojan horse came in there and just split everyone apart.
Divided everybody apart. So we're not united right now at all.
Bummer.
And so I think what's happening is that there's certain people that are picking certain things and then attracted to other things. And, I think that we all just need to come together and realize that there really is no separation between us, that we really are here on this planet for the same thing, which should be the practice and receiving of divine love and embodying presence.
Yeah.
And once we take a step back and really allow ourselves to be in a space to receive that, then all of that other minutia goes away.
That's right. There's no space for it.
There's no space.
You can't latch on to anything because there's no shelves for it at that point.
Yeah.
You're polished, you're shined, you're flowing.
Yeah.
I love that.
So the $1 million question is, how do we get there?
How do we get there? Well, I think ultimately self-love.
Yeah.
Right? So self-love, the it starts from within.
Of course.
Right?
Of course.
Cleansing your body.
Yeah.
Drinking clean water. Yeah. Making sure that you're emotionally, physically healthy and you're prepared to go into this realm of thought, because it's a lot of unlearning and we've all been brought up in state-sponsored schools, mm-hmm. and we're part of the system and all these different things. In order to eradicate it, it takes discipline.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There's some work that needs to be, as it should be.
I mean, Steiner would be turning in his grave right now.
He is.
You know?
I can feel it. I dream about it.
Yeah.
I'm sitting with him in front of a fire in my dreams, and I see him just kind of shaking his head, but also knowing that he did call this.
He did.
You know, he said 100 years ago, one third of the world would be completely soulless.
Yeah.
And another third would be like confused, what's going on. Mm-hmm. And another third will be fully on their mission, trying to turn the other third into the two thirds. Yeah. So there's a chance.
Yeah.
I think the hyper materialism has influenced into the core ethos of us being human.
Mm-hmm.
And we're now being ran by a pseudo artificial intelligence that's guiding our mechanisms and guiding our intuition, or shutting it off for the most part. Because as a human being, we inherently know what's right.
Yeah.
It makes sense that maybe we shouldn't be sitting in artificial boxes all day long, under artificial lights, sitting in a cubicle, having food delivered to us, and no movement or mobility and just rotting in our own cesspool. It makes sense why people are depressed out there.
Yeah.
Where the suicide rates are out of control right now.
Out of control.
You know, the really hardcore drugs are at an all-time high. Alcohol is at an all-time high. It's like people are in pain. Mm-hmm. They're in frustration.
Everybody's disassociating.
Disassociating.
Numbing.
Yep.
Yeah. And I mean, but like go back to the imprint.
Yeah.
If their first imprint of life was numb, aren't we going to seek that throughout our lives unless we're conscious of it?
Yeah, just on a biochemistry level.
Yeah.
This is how the body knows how to go find safety.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So again, that's why some of us, we go to the jungles and, you know, we blow our lids off or we separate ourselves from all the materialism and go sit at a Vipassana and all these things. They're not all compartmentalized. They're all a part of the same fluidity of choosing a path that's going to work for you. And mm-hmm. you might be listening to this and be like, what the hell are these guys talking about?
Yeah.
And that just might not be for this life for you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And, but if you're listening.
But if you're listening, you're
there's a reason you're hearing it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You said it right for me. And so I just want to give you all my love and reverence and for what you do.
Thank you.
There's nobody is doing anything out there that's not me, not anyone I know, that's more important, more critical for the cosmic evolution of humanity in this earth.
Yeah.
And our connection to our mother. I truly mean that, to our mother. And I'm going through some kind of medicine revelation right now, and I can feel it like just in my inner coil.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful work that you're doing. I walked my dad through disease and ultimately through his portal out of his physical body. Mm-hmm. And I've always been...
Which is midwifing.
Which is midwifing. And yeah. I've been called to work as a death doula because I feel I hold that center very strong, especially after the exercise of losing my best friend in that level.
Yeah.
At least losing his physical body.
Yeah.
And so to connect with a mirror...
Yeah.
It's good to recognize myself in you.
Yeah.
And so I really appreciate it.
Yeah. This is all part of the reflection that we should all be doing, you know, and,
that's right.
And this is where I really get to like scream to the masses, like let's wake up people. Let's totally. Do this together. Let's change this collective experience of birth. And I can tell you the babies that are choosing to come in a conscious way that are born at home and are born to aware, awake parents, that they're coming in with a totally different energy than, say, the babies that were born even 5 years ago.
For sure.
And I can feel it. I look them in the eyes. And, you know, 2020, they were scared. They were coming in like, do I want to be here? Like,
wow.
Like, is this the earthly planet that I really want to be on at this time and place? And wow. I really had to call a lot of those babies into their body. Like, you chose now. We need you now. Let's come into our body. Let's take a breath.
Wow.
Where now I'm like, thank you. Thank you for coming. We've waited for you.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's powerful right there. You feel it.
Oh, without a doubt. Just,
they're so present, right?
Yeah.
Looking
at
you.
Yeah.
Our dear friends, Mike and Lauren, Mike Salemi, Lauren, they just had a beautiful boy, Luca. And we were up in the bay with them and they're on our level.
Mm-hmm.
They're just so beautiful. And the child's presence was so clear.
It's amazing.
So I feel what you're talking about. I remember my first interaction with him. It just had me kind of just like, I had to go stand outside for a little bit and get a breath of fresh air.
Because they're not far removed from being in that holy space, right? No,
they're God.
They're God.
Yeah.
So you see that in them. And as the years pass, they kind of lose a little bit of that. But it's when they're that little that you're like, oh, I am in divine communion with God right now.
I love it. I'm here to support this mission. You know, being what I bring with Symbiotica and what we're doing with our new endeavors in the pediatric line and all the nutrition. There's many different angles here, and I want to be part of this process that's unfolding because I believe in the merging of spirit and science.
Yeah.
It has to happen.
Yeah.
That's spiritual science and ethereal and materialism. They define each other by the gnosis of both of them recognizing each other, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. We can use science to determine spirituality.
Yeah.
And now with quantum energy and different things unfolding, we knew all those to be true, yeah. radically true.
Radically true.
Yeah. So I'm here for it.
Yeah, I love it. And this isn't a doom and gloom. Like this is like...
No, this is the best
like,
ever.
Let's partner, you know, like let's do this, people. Like let's come together and connect and just continue to raise the vibration and change things.
We were talking about this offline. It was like, this is the greatest mission of all time.
It is.
Like... I incarnated in the 1980s
yeah.
in this Persian body in North America
yeah.
to do something wild.
Yeah.
And I'm stoked to have my heart in this.
Yeah.
And like, I couldn't have it any other way.
No.
I don't care if it's, I got to go out, you know, guns blazing.
Yeah. There's no greater time.
No, there's no greater time. This yeah. is it. So I really appreciate it. Is there anything else that you want to share with everyone listening about what you're doing, what you have going on over the next 6 months, 9 months? I'm sure we're going to be doing this again.
Yeah. Bruce Lipton is
Psyche.
Part of the Association of Pre- and Perinatal Psychology and Health.
Oh, epic.
So he and some other amazing people founded this association. And so they brought to the table, like take the biology of belief on crack and then put it into conception.
Hallelujah.
And so they're, you
like
know,
practical applications,
practical trainings, only seeing that mother baby dyad is one. And, you know, going into the preconception part of it and really just weaving in, I mean, they've known this. This organization was started in probably the late 80s, you know, like sure. they've been on the forefront of this before you could even say what it was.
Right.
And it's still this organization that continues to grow and
where the hell are they?
Birthpsychology.org. That's the best place to find them.
Birthpsychology.org.
Yep. Okay. And it's, you know, that combination of Bruce Lipton and David Chamberlain and
I know David.
Joseph Chilton Pierce. And they're all the core founders of that organization. That's so if there's incredible. One thing that you want to look into, it's birthpsychology.org, which is the basis of how I practice midwifery. Like that's where my foundation started.
Interesting.
In 2006, I did a local APA conference in Orange County, and you should have seen the heads that spun.
Wow.
With these conversations.
I love that.
Yeah.
Shake everyone's tree.
Shake everyone's tree.
To the
tree.
Truth.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I love that. I remember meeting him. This is 2013, 2014. And just was astonished by the clarity of just how integrous, you know, his position was.
Yeah.
And to take on that mission of proving against standard draconian medical science yeah. that we are just victims to something switching on and switching off, and we are completely powerless to our being and our thoughts, was such a radical change of thought.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really become a popular mechanism in all walks of life today.
Yeah.
And I think for me to truly embody it is where it works.
Love
you
it.
Know, it's that's the daily practice. And we're human, right? It's easy to be a victim. It's easy to feel offended. It's all of those things. We all have that embedded into our marrow to a certain degree.
Yeah.
But it's being aware of it and seeing the patterns that trigger that.
Yeah.
And how to just start getting a little bit more fluid with it. Love so it. That's awesome. I'm so happy that we brought that up. And that's a cornerstone of your entire alchemy.
Yeah.
Hallelujah.
As is yours.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm working on a project right now that's called The Remembering. The website's theremembering.co. And it's really just having classes for people to step into becoming a birth doula, a conscious birth doula, not one that's just going to go along with the system, to be a death doula, for us to have some sort of training for midwives to unite together and step away from this division. And that's my drive right now. That's my mission. I really want to get people connected. I get 10, 15 emails every single day. How can I find someone like you where I live? And I'm like, gosh, I got to connect these people. So if there's one thing that's going to be, it's going to be like this nexus of connection over the next 6 to 9 months. And we're all going to be doing it together.
What a time to get that going.
Yeah.
As you know, we just entered the spring equinox,
yeah.
which is also the Persian New Year, which is the true New Year.
Yeah.
Year 1402, if you're counting. And you know, life is spawning right now. This is it.
This is it.
And so let's just go. I'm all in.
Love it.
I mentioned how I was born through C-section. Mm-hmm. And
so was I, by the way.
So were you too. And you actually had a C-section, with your first child.
Yeah.
And, you know, I started really getting aware of what that meant probably about 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it started hitting me like out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. More so the pain that I felt for my mom.
Yeah.
You know, I can't recall the trauma, but I'm sure it's showing up in other areas, right? It's just, I don't know where it's being rooted from.
Yeah.
It could be being rooted from that. And what I found was it really helped me understand her fully and appreciate everything that she had gone through. And my relationship with my mom was pretty tumultuous growing up. She was, you know, very emotional, very up and down, very opinionated. It was tough. Yeah. And when I started really learning about the traumas that incurred during my birthing, it really helped me surrender a lot of the pain and resentment and anger. And how would you suggest to someone who had a very traumatic birth process, whether it's the mother or the child, mm-hmm. To recognize, you know, that they're not a victim.
No.
But it also,
there's no space for victimhood anymore.
We have to take ownership. We
have to take ownership.
To get through it.
Yeah. And right. So I think the first thing is just being aware of it.
Right.
One of the greatest things that I ever had, the biggest revelation with my parents, is that they were doing the best they could at the time with the information that they had.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's right.
Right. And so we get to come back with a level of grace. We get to come back with a level of compassion. And we get to realize that that doesn't actually dictate who we are and what we do throughout our lives. And so if we weave in this embodiment piece where we don't get to be victim to it or get to be numb to it, and we actually get to start to, if there's something stressful that happens to us, right? Like, think about birth. So you're in this hospital setting and things are stressful and you're hooked up to all these machines and IVs and, you know, the baby's heart rate's going down and we have to rescue you, right? We're set up in a system of somebody wanting to rescue you.
Right.
But we can't be rescued from ourselves.
Right.
And so when we step outside of the birth process, but then take that experience into the rest of our lives, when something starts to come up, we get to actually stand there. We get to breathe into the experience. We get to have a collective conversation if it's with someone else.
Totally.
And we really get to be in this space of not running from ourselves anymore.
You're your own doctor. You're your own God. You're your own protector.
You are your own guru.
Your own guru. Yeah. It's not 911.
No.
You know,
it's inside. It's inside.
That's true empowerment.
Yeah.
At the highest level.
Yeah. You know, I worked on an ambulance when I was 17, and I think that one of the most important pieces that I was able to bring into providing first aid or emergency care for these people was my verbal first aid.
Oh, interesting.
And so if you ever find yourself in a state where things are crazy or you're worried about something, just taking that breath and bringing yourself back to center, you'll remember that you have all of the answers that you need.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I link that to the biology of belief.
Yeah.
Right.
Bruce Lipton,
right? And understanding epigenetics at the core value of it being above your genetic profile is your belief systems.
It is.
Right. It's not just the water you drink and the food that you eat. That's all part of the environmental factors. But your thoughts govern how you evolve and look at yourself and your perception of self.
Of course.
And so you're right. If we're in our entire lives, we believe that someone outside of us has the keys to our happiness, has the keys to our health, has the keys to our financial freedom. What capacity does that give us to go after it ourselves?
Yeah.
No, we're running around half full.
Yeah.
You know, victim and scarcity and then poverty conscious, all those things.
Yeah.
That all plays into this entire conversation.
Of course.
Right?
Of course.
Those are all attributes associated with the disconnect of your own truth.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love it.
I love it too.
That's clever. Okay, Lindsay, tell me about optimum cord closure.
Okay, so when we are born in a standard vaginal birth, what happens is the baby comes down and is squeezed, right? Going through, that is a tight squeeze for babies. So all of baby's blood is circulating from the maternal placenta and into the baby. It's just a constant flow.
Right.
Baby's getting fed, baby's getting optimal oxygenation, the baby's getting stem cells. There's so much that's happening within that placenta, the cord, and the baby. And so what happens is the baby gets squeezed coming through the vaginal canal is that we estimate, different reports say different things, but we estimate it's about 30% of the blood flow that gets squeezed out of baby and is pushed back into the placenta. So when the baby is born and we immediately stick a clamp on that, the baby's born into an immediate state of physiological shock because they're hypovolemic. Okay. Wow. Like they don't
just get shut. Everything gets shut off.
Gets shut off right away.
Yeah.
So what I've noticed in my practice is I never rush anything. And once we allow that cord to pulsate, and what the research shows is even if it's just for 90 seconds, that baby is going to transition into this world so much smoother. They're going to have that backup oxygen lifeline. We're going to be in a space where they're getting all of their optimal iron levels. The newest research talks about how they're getting their optimal thyroid function from letting this cord pulsate.
Makes total sense.
Makes total Absolutely, sense.
Especially at that pivotal moment.
Yes.
Right? Where everything's calibrating.
And they're learning how to breathe and
all of it.
Adapt. And,
yep.
You know, it's just such a huge space.
Right.
So if we just, that's one thing you ask for, even if you're having a hospital birth.
Optimal cord clamping.
Yep. Delayed cord clamping is what they also call it.
Okay. I love it. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much for being here on
thank
Wake the
you.
Fake Up.
I love you so much.
We appreciate everything that you're doing for all the souls that are incarnating into this realm right now. Hallelujah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lindsay.
Yeah, thank you.